Season two of the Chronically Positive Podcast. We're back. Did you miss me? I missed you. This season, we are diving deep into relationships, how love, dating, and intimacy intersect with chronic illnesses. Relationships can be challenging for anyone, but when you add the unpredictability of chronic illness, it brings an entirely new layer of complexity. Today, I'm joined by Danny, who has an incredibly powerful story to share. She's experienced firsthand how relationships can impact our health, both positively and negatively. We're talking about how toxic relationships can literally make you sicker, the importance of surrounding yourself with people who can calm your nervous system instead of inflaming it, and the often untouched topic of intimacy and chronic illness. Danny has been through it all. Partners who ignored her illness, partners who fetishized it, and ultimately finding someone who supports her in a way that actually works. She's here to share her story, the hard lessons she's learned, and what she wishes more people knew about love and chronic illness. So whether you're single, dating, or in a long-term relationship, this episode is for you. But before we get into the episode, I have one favor to ask. If you could please rate, subscribe, follow the podcast, it really helps it get to people who would really benefit from hearing these stories. Now let's go meet Danny. It's so nice to meet you, Danny. Thank you.
It's so nice to meet you too. I'm so excited.
I am too. There's so much I want to know about you. Like, before we get into all the relationship stuff, you're a baker?
I am. I'm a baker. And actually, I found baking like through being sick, because whenever I was sick, I couldn't eat anything at all. And okay. So my mind like went into starvation mode, and it kind of obsessed about food. Literally, like, I was coming up with all these crazy concoctions in my head. And then once I got a little bit better, I was like kind of annoyed that I couldn't eat anything. And it's so cheesy, but I was like, I'm going to take the power back that food has over me. I'm going to become a baker. And so my mind was creating all these recipes for like a year while I was in the trenches. And then I kind of found baking from that. And now I'm a baker and I have a little career out of it.
Oh my gosh. I love that. That is all what this is all about. So do you have like your own bakery?
I do. It's right now it's completely online, and I do it out of my apartment, but we've been online for 3 or 4 years now, and it's kind of starting to outgrow me, which is scary, but a really good thing. So I'm looking at physical spaces.
That is so awesome. So you do a lot, do you do like a lot of like gluten-free, dairy-free stuff? What's your specialty? Ooh.
Yeah, I have been dairy-free for over like a decade now. And okay. So I do a lot of vegan stuff, like in gluten-free, which I'm kind of proud of that. Most of my stuff is like the full good stuff, but mm-hmm. I do like dairy-free and vegan stuff. It's kind of cool. I get to work with a lot of celebrities when they come into town. So I've worked with some really cool people. Like, I kind of found a life hack where like, that was a good marketing scheme. Not screen scheme, that sounds bad. It's like a good marketing thing. But like, sometimes celebrities want cupcakes when they come in town, or cakes to like celebrate a single or announce a new song or whatever. And I've been making cupcakes and cakes now for celebrities for a couple of years, which is really fun.
That is so fun. What's one of the most exciting celebrities you've met through your baking?
Oh my gosh. My favorite, and I say it all the time, my favorite, I worked with Steve Aoki.
Oh my gosh.
It was really cool. It was cool. And he's like the cake boss himself. So it was kind of fun. It was cool. And like, the reason I say he's my favorite is he was one, like a super chill, like nerdy guy. He was asking us about Pokemon cards and stuff, but like he wanted super customized cupcakes. I guess he was coming out with like a comic book or something. And so we like super customized a dozen cupcakes, and it was just so fun to work with.
That is so cool. Chronic illness sucks, but like, look at the cool stuff it can bring.
No, it
really
honestly,
brings out the creativity.
That's what I say. I was like, dang, like, at least there's a silver lining in all this. And the whole time I was like in the trenches, I kept saying like, this is going to make a hell of a cookbook intro one day. Like, this is going to be the best introduction to a cooking show I have. Like, I'm going to use this for the rest of my life.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I love that so much. Okay, so this season is all about love. It's not just love, too. It's like platonic relationships, whatever it may be. So, I guess, well, take it back. How long have you been sick?
I have been sick for the last 5 years now. It's 2025. So I kept making the joke that I was going to make it out of 2020 unscathed, and I did not. It was New Year's Eve of 2020.
Wow.
The irony. Yeah. And it's still a mystery what I have. We don't know. There's a lot of little things, but there's still one big umbrella term that no one has been able to figure out what it is yet. So I have like a lot of little diagnoses,
yeah,
but nothing's connected.
So when you say New Year's Eve, like it was a night and then everything changed?
Pretty much. I had like a little hiccups here and there leading up to it. Like I would start having some problems with food and digestion and all that. And I would just generally start to feel like I thought maybe I was like just getting a cold or something. And it was few and far between. And then, yeah, like New Year's Eve, it literally was just flipped on a dime. And like everything changed, which is crazy that it can even happen like that, but it can.
It's surprising because I feel like we don't have the same issues, but like for me, it happened like that. And I've talked to some other people where it was just like one day, like life just never was the same after like that one day. There's no like transition or easing into time for that.
Literally, it's not like, hey, by the way, you might get this. It was all of a sudden just like, oh, okay, I'm sick now, I guess.
Yeah, not fair at all. Although, like you said, like there was like some things leading up, like obviously, like I definitely struggled a lot. And like looking back, I struggled way more than I realized I was struggling.
Yeah, literally me. I'm like, why did I cut out dairy 10 years ago? It's not interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Why was my heart rate 200 in cholesterol? Yeah. Wow. So that's really hard. So 5 years ago, were you, yeah, in a relationship when that happened?
I was in a very toxic relationship. I was not in a good relationship at all. And it kind of expedited the process of being sick. I was told like it was always going to happen, but maybe to the severity and the how quickly it came on, it might not have came on at that point in my life had I not been in fight or flight for, you know, a year before that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was in a relationship, and it kind of spurred, honestly, from, like, a panic attack that I ended up having because my partner at the time, I kind of caught him doing some things with some other girls that he wasn't supposed to be doing in a relationship, and I used to struggle with panic attacks as a kid. I used to have anxiety, but I hadn't had one in like 10, 15 years, and I didn't know that what I was having was a panic attack, and I had a panic attack like as soon as that happened. And the number one thing that was the number one like symptom, side effect, whatever, of the panic attack was my stomach. Like I was so extremely nauseous and I was in so much pain just like all over, and I didn't know what was going on. And then pretty much every single time that I had a little bit of anxiety for whatever reason after that, it was the exact same symptoms. Like my body connected the two and was like, okay, anxiety equals a flare. And
oh yes.
Yeah, and then
never ending cycle.
Literally.
Oh, it's so bad. I know it. Yeah.
And it was a terrible cycle too, because then as I was trying to figure out what was wrong with me, I was getting anxious that nobody was figuring out what was wrong with me, which would just make me feel worse, and then I'd get anxious that I was feeling worse, and then I'd feel worse, and it was just like it snowballed.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I think people who are listening to this right now can totally relate, because at least I can totally relate to that. And it's so hard to like get out of, because it's just like one feeds the other and then it goes boop 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 boop. That's really hard.
Literally.
So
yeah.
So how long did you, I'm assuming you're not still in this toxic relationship 5 years later, I would hope.
Thank goodness.
So how did you get out of it?
So we ended up dating through my whole, when I was really, really bad, and we were still together the whole time. I think mainly just because I was kind of like it. Long story short, it got pretty bad. I was in and out of the hospital all the time, and I ended up losing, like, 30, 40 pounds. Yeah. And it was, like, I couldn't walk. My bladder wasn't working. Like, things were not great. And I had to move back home with my mom. We were living together, this person and I at the time. And I had to live back at home with my mom for 6 months because I was, you know, couldn't do anything for myself, and she was taking care of me the whole time. And we stayed together throughout the whole thing, and when things got, you know, really, really bad, he started pulling out the, oh, maybe looking at engagement rings and stuff like that. And which in retrospect is very toxic. But at the time I was like, oh, this is so sweet. And then I ended up recovering. At the time, I didn't know this was a chronic thing. I just thought it was like a bad virus or something.
Right.
And so whatever it was, I ended up gaining a little bit of my weight back slowly but surely. I was still struggling with like PTSD and an eating disorder that spurred from not being able to eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it was a whole basket case. And I still like was trying to comprehend what happened, like personally to myself and to my health. And we stayed together. We were together almost 3 years, almost to the date. And like a year or two, it was like a year and a half after that, because I was still delusional 21-year-old, was still like, this is a fine relationship. And like a year and a half after that, he ended up telling me during a fight one night, because we would fight all the time, he ended up telling me that he, 2 years prior, whenever I was sick in the hospital, he cheated on me while I was laying in a hospital bed and didn't tell me for 2 years. Yeah, and it kind of, I know it's really bad. It's like, I don't mean to trauma dump on you, but...
No, please do. That, oh...
Yeah, it was a mess. And then there was, like, because of that, it led to a whole bunch of weird connections in my head, where whenever I was, like, asking him why it happened, which there's really no reason why, but I was asking, like, why it happened, he kept saying, oh, it was because you weren't there, like, you weren't at home, you weren't around, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I wasn't going out doing other things. I was, like, struggling to live in a hospital bed. And stuff like that. And then it kind of connected a lot of things in my head where it was, like, being sick means I'm not there for people, meaning they're going to go out and do stuff like that. And so my head, like, kind of connected relationships with my illness a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of after that, I ended up breaking it off. And my body
went
through, like, a little flare again, as it does.
Yeah.
And, that's how I got out of that, unfortunately. But it connected, and it really messed me up for a long time. And then every relationship after that, I say every relationship, there were like three, but every relationship after that, every time something like trust-wise would come up, or I got the sense that maybe somebody wasn't telling me the truth, my body would go through the same symptoms that it did that first time, and it would kind of cause a flare. But yeah, that's how I got out of that.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad that you got out of that. That is honestly traumatizing. I mean, I can't even imagine.
It's really taken difficult. A lot of therapy.
I'm sure. Absolutely. So now, what are you, single? Are you dating? Are you partnered up? What's the deal?
Right now I'm partnered up. I went through a couple people that I was with after that original one. And it kind of took a little bit of me dating different types of people to find out exactly what I needed in a partner. And it ended up, I almost took a year off of dating too at the end of it before I met my current partner to kind of reevaluate what I really needed in a partner, and what I needed someone to do regarding my illness. I've dated somebody right after the original one who like didn't care one way or another that I had an illness. He was very nonchalant about it and very like, oh, it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. And I thought at the time, because I had just gone through the breakup with someone that when they cared about it, they cared about it and they said, you weren't here, I'm going to go out and, you know, talk to other women or something. I thought, oh, this is a good thing. Let's just ignore that I have this illness. Maybe it'll go away, which was not the case. And so I dated somebody who cared about it not at all. And then after that, I dated someone who cared about it way too much, and which I didn't think was a thing, but it was like... Again, because I struggle with a restrictive eating disorder because of all my health problems, the person I dated after that was very much so like, are you sure you can eat that? Are you sure this isn't going to hurt you tomorrow? Are you sure you can go out and you can do this? So it came from a caring point of view, but it would get me in my head a lot where I was like, I don't know if I can. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't. I don't know, which is not a good thing for my anxiety and my mental health regarding this.
It's so interesting you say that, because, and my mom knows this, my dad knows this too, like when I was really sick, they would say stuff like that and it would like really hurt me more than it would help me.
Mm-hmm.
And it would really make second guess myself and like limit myself. So Yeah, I mean, it seems like a good thing, but it actually ends up hurting the person even more. So I've never heard somebody else with a chronic illness say that. Maybe I just haven't talked to enough people yet, but that's really interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that someone else has gone through that too, because I hate to always be like, no, they cared too much, because it came, like, it comes from a good place. It really
absolutely
does.
It comes from a great place. I love you, Mom and Dad. I'm just no, but I totally get it. And you like start questioning yourself, and rather than just doing something and then you probably end up being fine without even thinking about it.
And then you think about it all the time, which is why now I call my partner right now, like, my little Goldilocks. He's like perfectly in the middle, where he'll push me a little bit, but if I say no twice, he'll be okay with it. Like, he won't push me too much, but he gets me out of my comfort zone a little bit, which is exactly what I need, because I get stuck in habits and routines and cycles and stuff like that. So that's
mine does that too. It's really important to sometimes have that push, because it can be scary too. Like, so it's good to have a cheerleader. Okay, sorry, I cut you off. I don't know if you're going to remember what you were going to say.
I think that's what I was going to say. I was just saying I was dating someone. I also, it's really interesting too. I think, and I don't know if like other people can relate, but at least for me, whenever I took like a year off and I was kind of trying to figure out like who I needed and what kind of person I needed, I didn't think about it at the time until it happened. But the person I'm with now, he also went through a lot of stuff that kind of equates to what I've been through at a young age, because going through, you know, stuff that we go through at a young age, it's kind of hard for other people our same age to relate to that, which is why I've never like faulted people that I've dated in the past. It's hard to tell another 21-year-old like, no, I just went through a near-death experience and I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
And so the person I'm dating now, he's also been through a lot of stuff, and he also looks at life the same way I look at life, which actually really helps, and I didn't even know was something that could happen until it happened. But, yes, I like him a lot. Things are going well.
That's so great. How long have you been together?
About 7-8 months, but it was one of those, like, once we were together, we were kind of like, oh, this makes sense. This is it. Like, okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. How did you meet?
Actually, online dating.
Me too.
No way!
Which app or which site?
We did Hinge.
Yep, that's the one I
use. Oh my gosh, that's great. I literally, when I took a year off, I kept thinking, I was like, man, I'm making the worst choice in picking people to date. Maybe a computer can do a better job than I can.
And oh, then, so were all the people before, like, from meeting, like, in person, like, happenstance?
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever been on a dating app.
Yeah, so the first date that I did on Hinge was now the guy that I'm with 3.5 years later.
Oh, my gosh!
It's scary. Were you really picky in, like, who you'd meet in person? I was so picky about it.
I was crazy picky. I only went out on one other date besides this one, like, besides meeting him. I was super picky. And I tell everybody, I'm like, and I, because my mom is also single, and so I try to, like, I'm like, Mom, you should join a dating app. and she's always like, no. And I'm like, Mom, I Frankenstein the perfect partner. Like, I picked exactly what I wanted. I filtered exactly who I wanted, and I found
it. Oh, my God, that's amazing. Yeah, I also, I don't know if a lot of people think like this, but I think, like, I was like, could this person be a murderer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, as women, are you kidding? We think about that all the time. Anybody. I did the same thing where I was like, okay, we can meet, but I'm driving. I'm picking the place. We can meet there. I'm not going anywhere with you, basically.
That's what I did, too. So, like, we met at a public. We went bowling, and he's like, I can pick you up. And I was like, no, I'm going to drive myself. That's okay. And now he's, like, the sweetest guy, and I feel bad. But, like, if you're a girl, like, it's scary out there.
Literally, that's like the same here. Now I look at him and I'm like, I can't believe at one point I thought you could possibly murder me. But like, you know, you text your friends before and you're like, I'm going to be at this location. This is his Instagram. This is his full name in case something happens.
Literally, yeah. That's so funny. Okay, so when you started dating, did you tell them, like, I think this is a question that a lot of people have, like, when do I tell the person I'm seeing that I'm sick?
That, and honestly, I'm not going to lie, that was the hardest thing. I had didn't know that that would be so difficult. Like I said, I went on one other first date before I met him, and it was, I ended up sharing, like, I kind of waited, you know, like 3 weeks before I was kind of like, okay, so I go through this, and I don't know why, but for me, it wasn't so much telling somebody that I have a mystery illness, which is a whole other thing, but telling somebody I get, like, infusions at my doctor's office every other week and stuff like that. You know, I do blood tests all the time. I do other tests all the time. And so to me, it was almost harder to tell people that because it almost makes it seem more real that you have something, not just like, I have a tummy ache all the time.
Right.
So I was, like, super nervous to tell him, and he actually kind of ended up saying, like, okay, like, thanks, but, like, it was kind of a lot for him, which is understandable, and it kind of made me feel weird to talk to anybody else about it, and I was like, oh my god, what if, like, someone can just say this is too much, and bless his heart, the person I'm with now, he kind of shared a lot about his past. He's in AA. He's told me I'm okay to talk about it. He's in AA, and he's sober. And so he kind of was like, hey, like, I have this thing to tell you. And he told me about, like, everything that he's been through and all of his past. And he said, if that's too much for you, like, it's okay. I understand. You could leave. And I was like, this is going to work because. And
let me tell you something.
Literally. And I, like, shared everything with him. And we were both very much so, like, just shake hands. We were like, okay, sounds good.
But I did
have to think about it. You know, it was really nerve-wracking. And it's still nerve-wracking. Yeah. I hate that. Like, I hate having to tell people that.
Absolutely. It's hard to, like, even, like, every, like, around Thanksgiving, everyone at my high school, like, always gathers at, like, a bar or whatever in the past 3 years. I've avoided it because the thought of, like, having to explain anything or, like, if I had my rollator, just, like, when growing up, they saw you as this one person for, like, 15 years. And then having, even to people that you know, it's very difficult to explain to someone you don't know or someone you do know. It's just, you don't know how someone's going to react.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I would completely see what you're talking about, especially because, like, I don't drink. I don't go out with and party or anything. And so it's difficult. But yeah, I totally get it. And especially I have, like, most of the time, knock on wood, looking at me, you can't tell that I have an illness, except the days that I have really bad flares and I can't get up off the couch or I'm on my period or something. And so a lot of times I've had people go, oh, well, you don't look sick. Like, what do you mean you have something wrong with you? You don't... Well, I saw you dancing at a concert yesterday. And I'm like, yeah, but I was on a couch for 12 hours today in pain because I danced at that concert yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so
exactly.
I struggle a lot with people doing that as well. And so I totally get it. I can't imagine having to tell all the people from your high school. That would not be fun.
Well, I didn't do it.
Good.
I didn't go. No. But also, I mean, I'm sure some of them have seen my account at this point because I share a lot of my personal account posts that I put on this account. So hopefully I wouldn't have to explain. But I did run into one of, like, my parents' family friends, and they're like, oh my gosh, what happened? And I was like, I literally froze. Like, I did not know what to say. I was like, I have a chronic illness now. That's literally
what... I'm not doing well.
And I looked at my mom, and she was like, yeah, I've been dealing with some stuff. I, like, turned, like, bright red and then ghost white.
I thought, like, she's been dealing with some stuff.
I think she started to, like, we were both, like, deer in headlights. Yeah, the rollator really throws people off that you know that don't know what's... Or, like, any mobility aid. Like, if they see you with one, they're like, oh, my God. Literally. What's wrong? Which is, like, valid. Because, like, that's... They'd have never seen you like that. They assumed that I had, like, a leg injury. And I was like, I wish that was going on.
I... Understandable.
I was like, yeah, maybe I could heal from that.
Yeah, right? Dang, that sounds nice, actually.
Okay, anyways, so since your partner was an AA, that means he doesn't drink, you don't drink. That's really great.
That was the biggest thing. Because people my age, I'm about to be 25, and so people don't think that it's, like, a big deal when one person drinks and one person doesn't. And sometimes, especially because I've dated people in the past that have had problems with that, and so it's been a dividing thing, but it's been really nice for both of us because we both kind of understand each other on a certain level, but we're also not in each other's lives. Like, I'm not an AA, therefore he doesn't have to worry about that. He doesn't have a chronic illness. He doesn't have to worry about that. But we don't drink. We don't go out and party. Like, if we do party, we go out and we hang out together. We're home by 9 p.m. Like, it's not a big deal. But, yeah, the drinking thing is really nice. And I don't have to explain it to anybody, which is awesome.
That is so awesome. So I stopped, or I guess I never really started, because anytime I drink, I would feel really faint. Mm. Like, when I had my first alcoholic drink in high school, because alcohol dilates your vessels or whatever, and you have POTS and pass out, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, I didn't drink at all in high school, college. So, like, there were times. So I dated this one guy in high school, and, like, he was like, "You're so uncool for not drinking." It would, like, pressure me, and, like, I didn't know I had an illness at the time, but I was like, when I drink, I literally faint. Like, why do you want me to be drinking and then passed out on the couch? Like, so there was times where, and this is so bad, I would take a beer can, go to the bathroom, spill it out, and then fill it up with, like, sink water. And, like, think that I was drinking, which is so bad. I was 17, so, like, whatever, I didn't know. But
it's so interesting that you say that, actually, like, low-key, because my sister has POTS as well.
Okay.
And so, yeah, obviously we got something, because my mom has Sjogren's, so there's something going on in the family.
You got one thing, there's,
You know, and that's what I've been, and I, just quick tangent, I've been told that with autoimmune disorders, I didn't know that it wasn't, like, you know, my mom has Sjogren's, my sister and I are going to have Sjogren's. It's like, when you have an autoimmune disease and you have a kid, it opens the door up to, like, anything. Like, you have more of a chance to get anything. And, yeah, not to mention, I did a test and I came back, I have a positive ANA marker, but they were still, like, anyway. My sister has POTS, and so she doesn't drink either. And she's in college right now. She goes to A&M. When she does drink, she gets, like, broken blood vessels all over her feet and up her legs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she's on medication now for the POTS, and it's better, but she still, you know, downs the salt packets all the time and drinks a ton of water, several Stanley cups of water a day.
Yeah.
But she did the same thing. So I don't know if you know anything about A&M, but they do this thing called a ring dunk, and you put your class ring in the bottom of a pitcher of beer, and it's a huge tradition, and everyone does it, and then you chug the pitcher of beer. And it's a disgusting habit that it's like a disgusting whatever tradition that they do. It's gross. Everyone throws up. But my sister was like, well, I can't do that. Obviously, what am I supposed to do? So she, like, put it in the pitcher and poured a little bit out to a lot of the people, the family that were there, and, like, helped her boyfriend and everything. But, and I'm going to say this on a podcast, but I did, whenever we were at the ring dump, she came around to my friends and I, and she ended up, like, without anybody seeing, she was, like, behind us, and we all were, like, turning around and kind of guarding her, and she, like, shoved hers down the sink. She did the exact same thing you did. She poured her beer cup down the sink and, like, took a sip at the end and was like, I did it!
I so love that. Yeah.
It's interesting that you say that, because she just did the same thing, too, but...
That makes me think of something. So this is something that no one knows, and I'm revealing it now on the podcast. It's not really a big deal. So for my 21st birthday, I had a party with a bunch of my friends, and then we went to a bar at midnight, and my parents were there. I love my parents. They're always a part of everything, and because they also had to be there because not everyone was 21. And so I ordered, like, my first drink, and my mom, I talked to my mom, I was like, Mom, like, I don't want to have alcohol, but, like, I don't want to, like, not, like, what do I do? And they had a non-alcoholic beer, but everyone at the party thought that I was having my first alcoholic, like, legal alcoholic drink.
And I love that for you. That is
so awesome. Now everyone knows.
I love that. That is.
And
so
I was cool. Even like, woo, like, woohoo. I feel it. Like, that was your first legal drink. I was like, it's so great. Like,
it's great. I love that. I had a 21st birthday party for myself too. And it was like one of those, cause I got sick, you know, December 2020. And then my 21st was March 2021. And I was like denying that something was wrong with me. And so I was like, I'm going to throw a party. I'm going to have all my friends over. Nothing is wrong with me. Meanwhile, I was like struggling to just breathe.
Right.
And And I was like, nothing's wrong with me. I don't know what you're talking about. And I threw a 21st birthday party here, and all my friends were drinking, and I don't drink. I'm like, never drink. I don't like the taste of alcohol.
Yeah.
And so it was so rare that I even drank. And they were pouring, like, shots, and they were like, oh, no, we'll give you a champagne shot. Like, that's it. It's not, we'll all take, you know, vodka or whatever, and we'll do a champagne shot for you. And it was like, this is the baby drink. You can do it. And I have such a vivid memory of taking the shot in two sips, because I'm a baby, and I took the shot in two sips, and I have a distinct memory of, like, instantly feeling awful, and I had such, like, an inkling in my head that I was like, oh, something is so wrong, like, something is really wrong, and it was like, I've never been able to, like, take a sip of champagne since, because it, like, my brain was like, oh my god, you did this, and then it felt bad. And the next day, like, I was in the hospital, and it was a whole big deal. But I remember...
Oh, gosh.
I know. I remember alcohol. Like, I remember that night, I, like, called my mom, and I was like, something is not right. Like, I don't understand. Like, I just took two sips of this champagne, and I feel absolutely awful. So, man, alcohol is crazy, which is why it's nice now that I don't drink, and I don't have to worry about somebody drinking and vice versa.
It is so nice. That makes me think of when I drank... I tried again one time in college. I went to a party, and I turned to my roommate, and I was like, I can't feel my legs. Like, they weren't moving. Like, I couldn't, like, I had to think really hard to make them walk. It has to do something with, like, autonomic dysfunction or whatever. And, like, I came home and I, like, cried and cried because I thought that I was dying.
You're like, I can't.
And that was, like, the last time. That was it. After that, I was like, your girl can't drink. And that was, like, half a beer. Like, not even. And, like the Natty Lights that have, like, no alcohol percentage in them at all.
It happens. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but I had this thing where even before I got sick, I don't like not being in control of how I feel. So I never smoked weed and never, like, drank to get drunk. And so, like, I don't feel like I'm missing out because I love to be in charge of how I feel, even if it's something that makes me feel good. Like, I need to be driving the car. Like, I need to be the one, you know? So whenever... oh my god, it just caused so much anxiety. Like, even when I'd be around people smoking a ton of weed, I'd be, like, panicked. Like, it was going to go inside of me and make me crazy.
We are kindred spirits, because I've told everybody that's why I never drink, because people in high school were always like, why don't you drink? Why don't you smoke? And I was like, and I say the same thing. I don't like to not be in control. And my therapist now laughs at that, because I'm like, I want everything in my control at all times. But literally the exact same. So I never smoked. I never drank. And then when I got sick, like, because I was in so much pain and I wasn't eating, my doctor literally, like, shut the door. And I always say that I can't say his name because we're in Texas. But he shut the door of his room and he was like, have you tried smoking marijuana before? And I was like, no, of course I haven't. And he was like, you should try it. And I ended up, like, medically using it for a year because I had to survive. And so I make the joke now that I'm like, I never did. My entire life, I never did.
Well, like, I think of it like medicine. Like, whenever it comes to new medication, terrified to try a new medication. Like, anything that, so, that's scary, but you did it and you were okay.
It ended up helping so much, which is genuinely helped a lot.
I know it can help a lot, so.
Yeah, especially
I'm glad you were able to power through get yourself to do it.
It took me forever. I was literally, like, my mom was helping me. That's how bad it was. Like, I was in her backyard, and I was like, okay, I don't know how to smoke. And she was like, I don't know how to smoke. And you're like, my mom's also never done anything, and so she's like, I don't know. And I'm, like, just trying to figure it out. It was bad, but it did help, so.
That's good. That's really good. Okay. So a lot of people in the chronic illness community want to know about intimacy. And I think it totally varies depending on what you have. What sorts of challenges do you face when it comes to intimacy and your illness, if you're comfortable sharing?
I'm very comfortable sharing. It is okay. It has almost, like, the challenges have changed over the years, which is also interesting. They weren't the same as they were at the very beginning. When I first went through everything and I lost so much weight, I lost a lot of self-confidence. And that's kind of where the intimacy issues arose a little bit. And then because of the way that my first relationship ended, that also affected my intimacy problems in relation to my illness, because it was like, I kind of tied it to me looking a certain way, like very sick and very unhealthy, to my partner doesn't want to be with me physically anymore. That's why they went out and they did all this stuff. In the relationship after that, the person I was with kind of like sexualized how thin I was and how unhealthy I was. And so I had a bad attachment to it from that. So that was more like mental blocks and stuff like that. And then recently, now that that's all been healed, and now that I'm dating like Goldilocks, perfect future husband, it literally, it is so funny because all of like my relationship with intimacy has healed, and now it's more of a trigger for pain, which has never happened before except in the last year. And I wasn't able to pinpoint it until my OBGYN started talking about the possibility of endometriosis as the root of my problems. And she kind of had me like track my menstrual cycle, track when I have sex versus when I have pain, see if they're related. And come to find out, they're extremely related. And so I've been able to pinpoint it down to like 5 or 6 hours after is when I start being in pain. Right. And so now it's kind of a different relationship with intimacy where it's hard to be in the moment whenever you know like this is going to cause me pain later. And it's hard to kind of take yourself out of that sometimes. And there have been times that I've done the, well, I have something to do later, so I can't, you know, not today, or, like, not right now. And I'm like, well, I have somewhere to be in 5 hours, so actually, can we wait till later? And, like, you're timing it out. Or, oh, I'm going out of town tomorrow, so I can't do it today. And stuff like that. So it's kind of hard sometimes to keep in the moment, which is something I've never dealt with. I've always been, like, a person that felt very connected to that side of her. Yeah. And now, like I said, of course, that I've met the perfect person, my body's the one that's now in the way. But yeah, I think that's fairly common, as you were saying.
Love that you said that, because that is something that I deal with too. Like, for me, like, if I don't have, like, like, we can't be intimate, like, after 11 once my blood pressure medication wears off, because I can't be doing that kind of physical activity. Or when we wake up in the morning, like, gotta wait an hour for this to kick in. Like, it's like sometimes it can't be spontaneous. So like the planning, and like I totally get that too. And also for me, I always worry about fainting during an intimate moment. And because not only is it scary for you, but it's like scary for your partner, because they're like, because now you're not conscious and they're,
yeah, doing that would something probably that's like put a damper on it.
I have no spoon.
You're good. I'm laughing because I literally just had an applesauce right before we started this.
It's like all I can eat.
I carry
it's the only snack food I can eat.
See, that's me with graham crackers. I don't know what it is. I have like these little tiny apple juice boxes in my refrigerator, and people are always like, "Why do you have the baby apple juice boxes?" And I'm like, "Well, because my blood sugar, if it drops, that's the quickest way to raise it is apple juice." So I'll go over
there.
That's
what I have too.
Take a little juice box. So I totally get it. But yeah, the planning thing for sure.
Yeah.
Or like, and the, you know, I don't know how open I can be, but it also depends sometimes on the position for me a lot of times with my problems. And I'll be like, well, no, I got something to do tomorrow, and if we do it here, and my partner also knows that too. I've been open where I've been like, hey, I've been able to pick, because he helped me too, where he was like, we did like experiments where we were like, let's count down, let's try this day, let's see what happens. And I know it was hard for him too to kind of know that, like, not directly correlated to him, but like it's going to put me in pain. And so it was kind of hard for him as a partner to be like, are you sure, like, this is okay, like, I don't want to hurt you. And I've always been like, if I'm saying it's okay, it's okay, like, I know it's coming.
No, totally.
And there have been times where I've like stopped in the middle before, and I've been like, I feel too sick, like, I can't, this made me feel a certain type of way, or my body's reacting in this type of fashion. Or even like, in terms of my PTSD, sometimes it acts up during sexy time and stuff like that. And so I totally get it.
Yeah, totally. And, like, it's also hard because then after, like, having to stop, we feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, we had to cut it short. It's hard to deal with that. I haven't quite figured out how to deal with that.
I think having the right partner helps too a lot. If they're genuinely like, no, it's fine, like, don't worry about it, then that's nice. But definitely there have been times where you feel, where you're just kind of like, okay, I hate that.
It's hard. Like, even if they say it's fine, it's really hard to, like, you know, to not kind of beat yourself up about it. But they'd rather you, if you're with someone who truly cares about you, they'd rather you be okay than them.
Oh, yeah. I get, I'm like,
I don't know how I want to word this.
I get what you're saying. Yes, exactly.
This podcast just went from PG to PG-13.
It's a little bit harder for us to be okay than it is for them to be okay. So totally.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Sometimes it could be a little tricky to navigate.
I guess we'll start wrapping. Were there any other aspects of relationships that you thought people could relate to or that you wanted to talk to before we wrap up?
Ooh. Oh my goodness. What a tough question. I don't know. so much pressure all of a sudden. Maybe just stressing the importance of, like, I would say I wouldn't be in the relationship I was in now if I didn't take the time to figure out my own stuff. And I kind of had to learn to put myself first, which is something I never did. And that even if I ignore my illness, it's not going to go away. And so I kind of had to come to terms with that first and accepting myself as myself before I tried to find somebody that could also do that. Because, I mean, for partners, asking you to, like, you're not only taking me, but you're also taking this lifelong chronic illness as well, is something pretty big. And so I think it's, you know, I think that's a big thing, is to kind of learn to accept yourself with your illness as well, and then figure out what you need before.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And for me, unfortunately, I got sick 3 months into dating my boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
So it was very difficult. We were kind of accepting together, and it has not been easy at all. But I do think people who are single and listening to this, it is really important to accept yourself and to love yourself before you can let somebody love you, because otherwise it's not very good.
Yeah, but that's good that you guys have been able to weather that together.
Oh, it's been hard.
Oh, I struggled for a little bit, kind of at the beginning of this, whenever I kind of realized, like, oh, this is the person I'm going to be with. Like, I knew it, but then I felt kind of I always said that I thought that I had commitment issues, and I would always tell my therapist that. And she was always like, you don't have commitment issues, though. Like, you've gotten into these long relationships. And I come to find out it's because, like, I have a commitment issue with feeling like I'm a burden to somebody, like committing to somebody, because I feel like not I'm stuck with you, but I'm scared that you're stuck with me for the rest of your life.
Yep.
And so I majorly felt like a burden before, not for any reason that my partner's doing, but just me in general, is I'm like, I'm making you live with this for the, are you sure you want to deal with this for the rest of your life? Like, are you positive?
Totally. The amount of times, like, I told my boyfriend when I first got sick, I was like, man, you didn't sign up for this. Like, if you want to leave, like, now is your chance. Otherwise, like, it would be really awful.
He said, please don't cheat on me while I'm in the hospital.
Oh, my God.
Wait, so y'all been together, you said, like, 3 years?
Yeah, so we had our first date November 12th, 2021.
Wow.
So, a little bit over 3 years, and we just moved in with each other in July.
Fun.
So, is there anything that you would like to plug?
Ooh, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay, well, follow my bakery. I'm just kidding. I guess my baking account is at foodie_with_duh. It's foodie with booty. Yeah, all separated by underscores. And I do some cool things over there. I'm also in the process. This is very, like, new, but I'm in the process of maybe starting a cookbook called Chronically Sweet, where I kind of meld the two because I found one because of the other, and so I thought it'd be cute.
Oh, so I love that.
In the process of that, but that's what I got. That's what I have to plug.
That's awesome. It was so nice meeting you and talking to you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that brings us to the end of our very first episode of season 2. I think so many of us can relate to Danny's experiences in one way or another. Whether it's navigating relationships while undiagnosed, dealing with partners who don't quite understand our needs, or struggling with emotional and physical challenges of intimacy and chronic illness. Danny's story is such an important reminder that the people we surround ourselves with can either support our healing or make things worse. Finding someone who calms your nervous system instead of inflaming it isn't just a preference, it's essential for our well-being. If you resonated with anything we talked about today, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me on Instagram at The Chronically Positive Pod. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, or share it with someone who might need to hear it. Thank you so much for tuning in to season 2 of The Chronically Positive Podcast. I'll see you next week with another real and unfiltered conversation about relationships and chronic illness. Until then, take care of yourself. And remember, you deserve relationships that make you feel safe, supported, and seen.